这里是希望之声网上时针英语节目。
Welcome to our program today. This is Jules from the Internet, and my name is Debbie. And I'm really glad that you've joined me today for our program. Jules from the Internet is a program where we hope that you will learn some more English. I know that you know some, and you're very interested in the English language. Sometimes people write to me and tell me that they know English quite well on paper.But you know, they've not heard it or practiced it very much. So this program is for you. I hope that you will be able to hear how I say some of the words and then repeat them, even if it's to yourself. That way you can practice the words and you will be able to speak the English language better. Well, we've been working on a story called A Story That Will Move You.Do you remember that it's in Book 12? We're doing Book 12 already. And the story number is 412. This story is very long, and we've done a couple of programs already on the story. But you know, I'll read it again for you today so you know what the story is about. And then we'll pick up where we left off, and we'll go through and do some of the new words that maybe you don't know.And I hope I pick out the right words for you. Sometimes I pick out words that I think would be new to you, but maybe there are more words that I need to do for you. You'll have to write to me and let me know. At the end of the program today, I'll give you my address so you can do just that. I'm going to read to you now our story 412, and it's called A Story That Will Move You.I sat with two friends in the picture window of a quaint restaurant just off the corner of the town square. The food and the company were both especially good that day. As we talked, my attention was drawn outside across the street. There, walking into town, was a man who appeared to be carrying all his worldly goods.On his back. He was carrying a well-worn sign that read, I will work for food. My heart sank. I brought him to the attention of my friends and noticed that others around us had stopped eating to focus on him. Heads moved in a mixture of sadness and disbelief. We continued with our meal.But his image lingered in my mind. We finished our meal and went our separate ways. I had errands to do and quickly set out to accomplish them. I glanced toward the town square, looking somewhat half-heartedly for the strange visitor. I was fearful, knowing that seeing him again would call some response.I drove through town and saw nothing of him. I made some purchases at a store and got back in my car. Deep within me, the Spirit of God kept speaking to me. Don't go back to the office until you've at least driven once more around the square. And so, with some hesitancy, I headed back into town.As I turned the square's third corner, I saw him. He was standing on the steps of the storefront church, going through his sack. I stopped and looked, feeling both compelled to speak to him, yet wanting to drive on. The empty parking space on the corner seemed to be a sign from God, an invitation to park. I pulled in,got out, and approached the town's newest visitor. "Looking for a pastor?" I asked. "Not really," he replied. "Just resting." "Have you eaten today?" "Oh, I ate something early this morning." "Would you like to have lunch with me?" Do you have some work I could do for you? No work, I replied. I commute here to work from the city. But I would like to take you to lunch.
Sure, he replied with a smile.
As he began to gather his things, I asked some surface questions.
Where are you going?
St. Louis.
Where are you from?
Oh, all over, mostly Florida.
How long have you been walking?
14 years, came the reply.
I knew I had met someone unusual. We sat across from each other in the same restaurant I had left earlier. His face was weathered slightly beyond his 38 years. His eyes were dark, yet clear. He spoke with an eloquence and articulation that was startling. He removed his jacket to reveal a bright red T-shirt that said, "Jesus is the never-ending story." Then Daniel's story began to unfold. He had seen some rough times early in life. He had made some wrong choices and reaped the consequences. 14 years earlier, while backpacking across the country, he had stopped on the beach in Daytona. He tried to hire on with some men who were putting up a large tent and some equipment. A concert, he thought. He was hired, but the tent would not house a concert, but revival services. And in those services, he saw life more clearly. He gave his life over to God. "Nothing's been the same since," he said. "I felt the Lord telling me to keep walking, and so I did, some 14 years now." "Ever think of stopping?" I asked.
"Oh, once in a while, when it seems to get the best of me. But God has given me this calling. I give out Bibles. That's what's in my sack. I work to buy food and Bibles, and I give them out when His Spirit leads." I sat amazed. My homeless friend was not homeless. He was on a mission, and he lived this way by choice. The question burned inside for a moment, and then I asked, "What's it like?"
"What?"
"To walk into a town carrying all the things on your back and to show your sign."
"Oh, it was humiliating at first. People would stare and make comments. Once someone tossed a piece of half-eaten bread and made a gesture that certainly didn't make me feel welcome. But then it became humbling to realize that God was using me to touch lives and change people's concepts of other folks like me. My concept was changing too. We finished our dessert and gathered his things. Just outside the door, he paused. He turned to me and said, "Come, ye blessed of my Father, and inherit the kingdom I've prepared for you. For when I was hungry, you gave me food. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. A stranger, and you took me in." I felt as if we were on holy ground. "Could you use another Bible?" I asked. He said he preferred a certain translation. It traveled well and was not too heavy. It was also his personal favorite. "I've read through it 14 times, he said. "I'm not sure we've got one of those, but let's stop by our church and see." I was able to find my new friend a Bible that would do well, and he seemed very grateful. "Where are you headed from here?"
"Well, I found this little map on the back of this amusement park coupon."
"Are you hoping to hire on there for a while?"
"No, I just figure I should go there. I figure someone under that star right there needs a Bible. So that's where I'm going next." He smiled, and the warmth of his spirit radiated
the sincerity of his mission. I drove him back to the town square where we'd met 2 hours earlier, and as we drove, it started raining. We parked and unloaded his things. "Would you sign my autograph book?" he asked. "I like to keep messages from folks I meet." I wrote in his little book that his commitment to his calling had touched my life. I encouraged him to stay strong, and I left him with the verse of scripture from Jeremiah. "I know the plans I have for you," declared the Lord, "plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a future and a hope." "Thanks, man," he said. "I know we just met and we're really just strangers, but I love you." "I know," I said. "I love you too. The Lord is good." "Yes, he is. How long has it been since someone hugged you?" I asked. "A long time," he replied. And so, on the busy street corner, in the drizzling rain, my new friend and I embraced, and I felt deep inside that I had been changed. He put his things on his back, smiled his winning smile, and said, "See you in the New Jerusalem." "I'll be there," was my reply. He began his journey again. He headed away with his sign dangling from his bedroll and pack of Bibles. He stopped, turned, and said, "When you see something that makes you think of me, will you pray for me?" "You bet," I shouted back. "God bless. God bless." And that was the last I saw of him. Late that evening, as I left my office, the wind blew strong. The cold front had settled hard upon the town. I bundled up and hurried to my car. As I sat back and reached for the emergency brake, I saw them. A pair of well-worn brown work gloves neatly laid over the length of the handle. I picked them up and thought of my friend and wondered if his hands would stay warm that night without them. I remembered his words. "If you see something that makes you think of me, will you pray for me?" Today, his gloves lie on my desk in my office. They help me to see the world and its people in a new way. And they help me remember those 2 hours with my unique friend and to pray for his ministry. "See you in the New Jerusalem," he said. "Yes, Daniel, I know I will." What a nice story. I don't ever tire of hearing that story because I can get something new out of it every time I hear it or every time I tell you the story. Well, we didn't get very far on our previous program, so let's go right into it. We were down where it was talking about this man needed to drive around the town square so that he could see if that stranger was still there. He needed to see if he was there in order to help him, but yet he was kind of afraid, wasn't he? It said, "And so, with some hesitancy, I headed back into town." He was hesitating, wasn't he? He didn't want to go there. He was having misgivings. He was not certain of what he should do. That voice inside him said, "Drive around at least one more time." And he thought, "Okay, I'll do it." But not after he had some hesitancy. That's kind of a pause, isn't it? He had to pause and say, "What should I do?" So let me spell hesitancy, because that's kind of a big word. Hesitancy. H-E-S-I-T-A-N-C-Y. Hesitancy. H-E-S-I-T-A-N-C-Y. Well, he went around the third corner. So that it said here, "As I turned the square's third corner." Now that means how many corners are in a square? 4. So he went around 4 corners, but as he got to the 3rd one, that's where he saw him. The stranger was standing on the steps of a storefront church, going through his sack. Now here, sack means a bag. It could also mean his backpack. Now, in the United States, they do say sack for bag. I say bag, but I come from Canada, don't I? And that's the difference between the languages. The United States says sack, and I say bag, and it means exactly the same thing. So where you come from, you may have another word that means bag or sack, but it might be a different word. That's just the English language, isn't it? You have more than one word with the same meaning. Well, I stopped and looked, feeling both compelled to speak to him, yet wanting to drive on. This man that wrote the story wasn't sure what he should do. He was compelled to speak to him. That means something told him he should. It was kind of like pressure to do it. There was a force there that said, go and talk to him. That means compelled. He was compelled to do it. Compelled is spelled C-O-M-P-E-L-L-E-D. Compelled. C-O-M-P-E-L-L-E-D. But yet this man still wanted to drive on. That means he just wanted to go away. He didn't want to stop and talk to this man, but yet he felt he should. He wanted to drive on. That means to go away. Well, he found this empty parking spot on the corner. That might be a sign, don't you think? And that's what he thought. It might be a sign, an invitation to park. He had no excuses left. There was an empty spot waiting for him to park in. So it was like an invitation. It was like somebody saying, here's a parking spot for you. So it was an invitation to stop his car. Invitation. I-N-V-I-T-A-T-I-O-N. Invitation. I-N-V-I-T-A-T-I-O-N. Well, he pulled in. That means he just drove right into that spot. He pulled in. He parked there. He got out and he approached the town's newest visitor. When you approach something, what do? You go up to it, don't you? So if you were approaching a store, you would go up to the front door. Or if you were approaching your house, you would be going to your house. So he got out of the car and approached the town's newest visitor. So he went up to this man that looked homeless. Let me spell approached for you. A-P-P-R-O-A-C-H-E-D. Approached. A-P-P-R-O-A-C-H-E-D. Well, he decided he should ask him something, so he said, are you looking for a pastor? Now, a pastor is somebody that's usually in charge of a church. And if you remember, the man was standing at a storefront church. That means that there was probably a church nestled in amongst all the other stores on the street in that town center, right? So he asked, are you looking for a pastor? Pastor is spelt P-A-S-T-O-R. And that's another word for a clergyman. Okay? Pastor. Well, the man answered. He said, not really. I'm just resting. So he replied. He said in return to the question, I'm just resting. To rest means to just be still and not do anything. It might even be asleep. If you're resting, you sometimes sleep, don't you? But you don't have any activity happening. You're just sitting there or resting. So he replied. So he said in return, I'm just sitting here. Well, this man felt he needed to ask more questions. So he asked him if he'd eaten And the visitor replied, yes, early this morning. Now, I don't know what time this was. It must have been right after lunch, because at the beginning of the story, we found out this group of people were having lunch in a restaurant. So early this morning, that would mean, oh, early. What's early for you? Maybe 6 o'clock in the morning? That's usually the time people start getting up to go to work, isn't it? So maybe that's when this man had started his journey, early in the morning. Well, the person that wrote this said, why don't you come and have lunch with me? That tells me that this story happened right around the noon meal, because that's what we call lunch, usually. Lunch, L-U-N-C-H, the noon meal. Not the one early in the morning and not the one before you go to bed, but the one in the middle of the day, around noon. That's usually lunch, L-U-N-C-H. Well, remember the sign that this man had on his pack or on his bag? It said, we'll work for food. So he asked the man the question, do you have some work I could do? He didn't want a free meal, did he? All he wanted to do was work and then get paid in a meal instead of by money. But the man that wrote this said, no, I replied. So he said, he replied to the question, didn't he? I commute here to work from the city. If you commute somewhere, that means you live someplace, but yet you work in another place. I have to commute from my house to here. That means I have to go on the bus because it's, oh, few miles. So I don't work right where I live, but I commute. So I go by car or I go by train. I live in the country and maybe work in the city. Or it could be the other way around. I live in the city, but work in the country. So when you commute, it just means that you go somewhere to do your work. Commute. C-O-M-M-U-T-E. Commute. C-O-M-M-U-T-E. But he says, no, I don't have any work because I don't live here. I commute from the city to work here. But I'd still like to take you to lunch. So what did the man say? Sure, I'll go to lunch. So he replied again, didn't he? Replied, R-E-P-L-I-E-D. Replied, R-E-P-L-I-E-D. So he began to gather his things. He had been sitting or resting, hadn't he? So to gather means to pick up all his things. He maybe had a pack and a jacket and some boots. He had to gather all these together, so he picked them all up. And the man that wrote this said, I felt I needed to ask some surface questions. What are surface questions? Those are polite questions, aren't they? Maybe how to break the ice when you're meeting somebody new. Questions like, where are you going? Where are you coming from? What's your name? Those are surface questions. So he asked the man, where are you going? And the man replied, St. Louis. Now, you can also say that as St. Louis. That's in Missouri, and that's in the middle of the United States. So St. Louis or St. Louis would be appropriate when you say that. Another surface question was, where are you from? Well, the man replied, he said, all over, but mostly Florida. So mostly here means most of the time I'm from Florida or I grew up in Florida. I always tell people that I'm from British Columbia because that's where I grew up. I've also lived in Washington State and in Saskatchewan and Alberta. Those are different provinces in Canada. But I'm mostly from British Columbia. And that's what I tell people too. So this man probably had grown up in Florida, which is a state in the United States. Well, the man asked, how long have you been walking? It's pretty unusual to see somebody walk into town with everything they owned. What was the reply? 14 years. Wow! Can you imagine walking and just sleeping beside the road or wherever you happen to be for 14 years? That's a third of my life. Wow, I just can't imagine that. But there are people that do that. Well, we did not get very far again, but we've come to the point where we know this man has been walking for a long time. And in our next program, we'll find out why he's been walking this long. I did tell you that I would give you my address so that you can write to me. So let me give it to you now. Put down to Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, and my address is Kowloon Central Post Office Box. Let me spell it. Kowloon Central, capital K-O-W-L-O-O-N, Central, capital C-E-N-T-R-A-L, P.O. Box 71030 in Hong Kong. Kowloon Central, P.O. Box 71030, Hong Kong. Now, there are a couple of other ways that you can get in touch with me. One is by email. My address here is zhaomeng@vohc.com. zhaomeng@vohc.com. My fax address is 852-2457-6019. 852-2457-6019. I hope that you'll come back for the next program of Jewels from the Internet, where we'll continue our story called A Story That Will Move You. Bye for this time.
谢谢您收听今天的网上时针英语节目。如果听众朋友想跟我们取得联系，您可以直接发电子邮件给我，我是艾德，我的电子邮件地址是艾德，也就是汉语拼音的 AIDE 艾德 @vohc.cn。谢谢您今天的收听，再见。